The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Doug Holt Eakin is here, former CBO director, and Robert Wolf, his former economic advisor to Obama. Welcome to both of you. Robert, what was inflation when Biden took office?
I think it was probably 9-10%.
No. Come on.
But more importantly,
All right.
It's 3% now, so it's down by 2/3.
I apologize. I put you on the spot there. It was 1.4%, and that is fact. So, Doug Holt Eakin, these are the claims that the president has been making that the Washington Post is giving four Pinocchios. Kind of sounds like what Robert just said. Listen.
We have dramatically reduced inflation from 9% down to close to 3%. We're in a situation where we're better situated than we were when we took office.
It was 9% when I came to office. 9%. But look, people have a right to be concerned.
I think inflation has gone slightly up. It was at 9% when I came in, and it's now down around 3%.
All right, so apparently we're having a hard time with Robert's IFB. It was 1.4%.
The first time Biden said that 9% number, you'd think it's just a gaffe. He's old. He's getting up there. He didn't remember. Then he says it three more times. Then his spokespeople are out there saying it was 9% when Biden took office. And now all of the Democrats are saying it. That man there at the start of that clip was an Obama advisor. I don't know if he was trying to be cheeky at the start there, saying that it was 9-10%, and then says the important thing is it's 3% now. I mean, it's such an easy lie to expose. Joe Biden saying, I mean, you could make all the arguments you want about whether or not inflation was inevitably going to rise, but the fact of the matter is when he was inaugurated at the fake inauguration, January 20th, 2021, the rate of inflation was 1.4%. You can see it on the charts. And the peak there during Biden's time, it got up to 9 or 10%. Why revisit this? Why make that lie? Why go there? I mean, these are the adults that are supposed to be back in charge, and here they are lying like little children about things that I'm not an economist, but I can type into Google and track the inflation rate chart. Oh, 1.4%. in January of 2021. They want to shift it back to talking about Trump. They want to shift it back to, well, this was just an inevitability and Biden happened to be the one who was there to take on that burden. They lie, you know, just as a way of life. That is what this administration, the regime leading this country, does as just common practice. Perhaps they don't even know they're lying anymore. Well, welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston. I will be your guest host on today's show. Graduation is upon us here at the college, so it's a very busy time, and there's a lot of activity going on, so I'm happy to be able to sub in today for Mr. Stephen Fleury. If you have any comments for the show, as usual, send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget about Celtic Throne upcoming tour. I think it hits the Southeast United States for the 3 weeks starting the end of May, and then it'll go to the West Coast. You can visit CelticThrone.com to see the tour dates there. Well, just noting that chart and talking about this lie that they have been repeating over and over again, Joe Biden can't get it out of his head that it was 9 or 10%, and we had the graph just up there on the screen for you. Very easy to prove it. And then the news comes out today. Well, the Dow has hit 40,000. The economy is great. And all of it's such a shallow and kind of insulting thing to you see all of these big wigs, these stockbrokers shaking each other's hands, celebrating these big smiles because the Dow has reached another milestone, as if middle Americans or the people really struggling where inflation hits them the hardest. It's not Jake Tapper. It's not the MSNBC hosts who have 6-7-figure salaries, who probably don't do their own grocery shopping, who probably do own a lot of stocks and have a very vast investment portfolio like Nancy Pelosi. They love the Dow. They love stocks. But the people that are getting hit by inflation, those young college students that Biden is losing, why would they care about the Dow? I mean, it's a good market for the company. It's a good market for everyone, I guess. Karine Jean-Pierre, this was her reaction when a regime media spoke, or not a spokesperson, someone in the press asked her, why does Biden keep saying this 9% figure that's clearly wrong? Clip 11.
I'm going to ask you about how the president talks about inflation. So two times over the past 2 weeks, the president said inflation was 9% when he came into office. Is the president misleading Americans on that, or does he just not realize that inflation was 1.4%?
So, you know, and thank you for the question, because I know that this, we got a lot of incoming on this yesterday. And look, the point that he was making is that the factors that caused inflation was in place when he walked into the administration, when he took office. As you know, the pandemic caused inflation around the world by disrupting our economy.
I can't just say he was wrong. But it's their truth. It's what it was Obama's thing when he's caught making all of these lies in his biography, his autobiography, Dreams from My Father. He made up all these stories about his youth, and that's exposed. And then he says, well, it was my emotional truth. Biden said it was 9%, but really in saying that, he was actually trying to make another point, and that is that the factors that caused inflation, I'm just going to read what this says here. The factors that caused inflation was in place when he walked into the administration. Why can't he just say that? Why does he have to lie to get that conversation started? Of course, this inflation, Mr. Fleury talked about it yesterday on the show. All of that free money, everyone's so excited about it at the time, getting that stimulus check. And that was a sobering moment. I think all of us would have received those checks, and wow, how awesome is that? You've got a check pop into your mailbox for $1,200. But that was a sad, sad moment for the United States, to just free money for everyone. And that's the end of an empire when things like that start happening. And now, you know, that check for $1,200, $600, $1,400, that's wiped out in a couple of months of the Biden economy for what you pay now for those things. Was it worth it to have the $600 check? This is from The Hill. It says, inflation hits 20% under Joe Biden, pushing small businesses to the brink. Now, this is cumulative. They always will use the year-over-year stat or even the month-over-month just to, hey, it is lower, but you've got to take it in totality. Things, when you go to the grocery store, it's not 3% more expensive than it was a year or two ago. A lot of things are 50, 60, 70% higher. The Hill says, on Wednesday, the country hit a sad milestone. Inflation under President Biden hit a cumulative 20%. The dollar's value has plummeted under his watch. The Bureau of Labor Statistics also confirmed that the Consumer Price Index is resurgent and growing faster than average wages. Combined with weak GDP growth, this data shows the U.S. economy is re-entering stagflation. Historic inflation is causing declining living standards and a cost of living crisis. Under Biden's presidency, grocery prices have increased by nearly one-third and gas has risen by 50%. It feels like every daily convenience, from a turkey sandwich to some handyman help, has increased by 50% or more. I mean, it's hitting every little thing. Every subscription that you have, they're asking for more money now. They're looking for more ways to raise those costs. Any sort of discount that you were getting, well, that's being cut in half or done away with totally. The Hill says, yet Biden seems entirely out of touch with this reality. In a recent CNN interview, he responded to these inflation numbers by claiming they have the money to spend. And then The Hill says, in reality, it now costs the average American family $12,000 more to maintain the same living standards as before Biden took office. Those wages are not keeping up with inflation. I mean, think about going back to those stimulus checks again. Donald Trump, he did. He sent out the first two. And again, like I said, that was a sobering moment to see the United States of America doing that. And it could have all been avoided had there not been the lockdown crackdown. That conspiracy, I'll talk about that in a little bit. I've got some more news from Fauci. But had they not overreacted to the flu and locked down a nation and thought they could social engineer their way out of it? Donald Trump, that first round of payment, the CARES Act, that was $270 billion just printed like that, out of nowhere, handed out to everyone for free. The second round, the $600 check, $141 billion just out of thin air. $400 billion in the course of just a couple of months. And this doesn't even factor in all of the other nonsense spending they're doing at the time. And then Joe Biden gets in, and here's his big reward for all of the dead voters that voted for him. The biggest check of them all, $1,400 for each taxpayer. And then $1,400 additionally for the child tax credit. $1,400 per child. That one created $400 billion out of thin air. You have, in less than a year, $800 billion just out of nothing. They printed it. And like Mr. Palmer said yesterday, like Mr. Fleury quoted, it's cause and effect. What would you expect would happen when you devalue your currency like that? And you would think that the repercussions are so dramatic, the effect is so dramatic, that they would go back and look at the cause and say, hey, we did something wrong. We messed up. We shouldn't have done that. But instead, they double down. That's every politician cannot admit that we were wrong. They insist they were right, and someone else is to blame for the problems that we're seeing. Human nature, it's so stubborn. They won't admit they're wrong. And it's beyond even that. I mean, they're intentionally doing this now to destroy this country. And people won't stand up to it. Isaiah 30 and verse 8 through 10, it says, now go, write it before them in a table and note it in a book, that it may be for the time to come, forever and ever, that this is a rebellious people, lying children, children that will not hear the law of the Lord, which say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits. This is the people, the citizenry, they just want lies. Tell us it's good when it's not. And maybe they're not the ones overtly lying, but they have a careless approach to the truth. They don't care to seek out the truth, to call out the liars in government. They're behaving like children, like that verse says. And the people want to be lied to. They know it's a lie, and they accept it. I think it's not that big of a deal. Jeremiah 5 and verse 31 says, the prophets prophesy falsely, and the priests bear rule by their means, and my people love to have it so. And what will you do in the end thereof? They love to hear that false report. What a terrifying scenario. What a terrifying world to live in, where the leaders and the people love lies. They're not valiant for the truth. Mr. Gerald Fleury, in his article, A Dangerous New Age of Worshiping the Will, he writes, what is happening in America? A haze of deception enshrouds our nation. It is stunning how easily journalists, politicians, and other figures today deceive people. We must understand the spirit behind this deception, as it is far more dangerous than most people realize. He writes, Adolf Hitler started World War II, a war that killed 60 million people and inflicted some of the worst suffering in history. Mr. Fleury says, Hitler believed that if you tell a big lie and repeat it enough, people would believe it. He wrote in Mein Kampf, this is Hitler, in the big lie, there is always a certain force of credibility because the broad masses of a nation are always more easily corrupted in the deeper strata of their emotional nature than consciously or voluntarily. And thus, in the primitive simplicity of their minds, they more readily fall victims to the big lie than the small lie, since they themselves often tell small lies in little matters, but would be ashamed to resort to large-scale falsehoods. Again, a terrifying world. I mean, it's so backed up that Donald Trump, when he wants to expose the corruption of 2020, that's the big lie, that election was perfect, the most secure election in American history. That's the big lie. When Donald Trump says that, they attack him and say him questioning that election is spreading the big lie. This is how twisted and warped the truth is. This is there are people struggling in this country, and Joe Biden will say, you're not struggling. You have the money to spend. This is crazy, this world that we're living in right now. Truth has fallen. Lying is ubiquitous. It's just the way they operate. Look at Jack Smith and those prosecutors, the way they set up that photo op in Mar-a-Lago. I mean, it was shocking to see those photos at the start. Really, Donald Trump? Those were big classified documents, bright red, very official looking, and they're just scattered right along the floor, as if anyone would leave something like that on the floor in general, even if it wasn't classified. And then we come to find out that FBI agents, probably agents who did not have the clearance to see those documents, filed through them, laid them out, and then took these very serious looking front cover pages that said top secret, blah, 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 and paper clipped them onto the documents to make it look as if Donald Trump actually took those documents from the White House and were presented that way. It's Soviet. It's crazy. It's in everything. You can't believe anything they say. I mentioned COVID. There have been a few more hearings, some behind closed doors. There's another one coming up in a month with Tony Fauci. He's out of office, and they've organized a public hearing. But some of these transcripts from these closed-door hearings are coming out. And it's, again, a reminder of the lies. In 2020, ironically, they're forcing everybody to put the mask on, but the mask came off in 2020 as far as exposing government corruption, exposing how these institutions operate. This was the NIH director, Francis Collins, and he was being asked, what was the rationale behind social distancing? Remember all the stickers on the floor and people that would just freak out if you got, you know, past that 6-foot rule? If you were, I got yelled at a store because my toe was over that 6-foot line. I was 5'11" away from the person in front of me. And it was like the end of the world at that co-op store. That clerk would not stop yelling at me. Visually, you could just see the COVID. It doesn't make it at that 6-foot point. You just see it stop. The COVID, it knows. But if you're at 5'11", that COVID is just hitting that, bombarding them. So scientific, so much science. Okay, well, here's the director of the NIH. Where'd this come from? This congresswoman asked, do you recall science or evidence that supported the 6-foot distance? Collins, I do not. Then again, since then, it has been awfully large topic. Have you seen any evidence since then supporting 6 feet? This is 4 years on, plenty of time to do all the studies you want. No. No evidence. We made it up. Social engineering. It's not based on anything. It's will worship. They've just decided it's true, and they keep saying it, and they say it. And you get the elite to start saying it. And then you get the scientific journals to start saying it. And then it's dogma. You can't challenge that. Fauci at his closed door hearing. Just a world of lies. We've played dozens of those clips of him sparring with Rand Paul and asking about the gain of function research. And every time Fauci, we do not do gain of function. This is Fauci asked again about this. This is a transcript from this closed door hearing. I think in terms of 3PCO, and that's embedded in my mind. He didn't appreciate what gain of function according to the regulatory guidelines are. I was speaking in that term. So he was thinking of a different thing. When I spoke to him, he's talking about Rand Paul. I'll stand by my statement that when I said we do not do gain of function, I was referring to gain of function of concern according to the 3PCO guideline, done, full stop. So I have my definition of gain of function, and I know the definition by which Rand Paul is asking me the question, but I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to answer according to my own definition of the phrase. The congressman says, do you think that would have helped if you explained that day, that you were talking about a completely different thing, that you invented your own definition? Essentially, Rand Paul was very clear in how he was asking the gain of function definition. And Fauci says, no, that's not what we're doing. Now he says, well, when he just says gain of function, I think of it, you know, by these guidelines. Fauci says, I'm not so sure, to be honest with you, sir, that Rand Paul has a thing about me. It wouldn't have helped if I had told the truth, because Rand Paul is just out to get me. And there's nothing I could have said that would have changed his mind. Just lying as a way of life. And you get into all of these things. You could just go down the list. Russiagate is another one. This is a clip from Hillary Clinton a couple days ago. She just loves being on Morning Joe. She can get all the attention she wants. And she's on there. This is so rich to have her on there talking about Donald Trump committing a campaign finance violation. And we'll just listen to this clip. This is clip 5.
You know, justice delayed is justice denied. And the people in our country, it looks as though we'll most likely go to vote without knowing the outcome of these other very serious trials. And the one that is going on now currently in New York is really about election interference. It is about trying to prevent the people of our country from having relevant information that may have influenced how they could have voted in 2016 or whether they would have voted. I think that the defendant, the former president, knew exactly what he was doing when he went to such great lengths to try to squash, bury, kill stories, pay off people, because he understood the electoral significance of them.
Where do you start with dealing with something like that? This is crazy. I know I keep saying that. But if you know the facts, if you've been paying attention the last 8 or 9 years, that's insane the way these people operate. Justice delayed is justice denied. Donald Trump is the one being accused. I'm not entitled to a speedy trial of someone else just because I want the juicy details. That's not how it works. And in this case, if you're Donald Trump, you're accused of a crime, but you're not allowed to know what crime. You're accused of doing something, but we don't have to tell you what it is. Remember that? The first thing the lawyer said when they unsealed that indictment was, how do we build a case to defend this when they won't even say what the crime is? Hillary, justice delayed is justice denied. It's really about election interference. Donald Trump knew exactly what he was doing trying to squash that story. Just imagine. Hillary Clinton is over there working with Chris Steele, working with the FBI, churning up all of this salacious garbage to smear Donald Trump. What if Donald Trump heard about that? What if he tried to get Steele to sign a non-disclosure agreement? They'd probably charge Trump for obstructing justice or something. They'd find something. because you're not allowed to protect your reputation. They're allowed to say whatever they want about you, no matter how false, how ludicrous it is. You're not allowed to defend yourself. If you say E. Jean Carroll is lying about you, you're defaming her. You have to pay her $80 million. You've ruined her credibility. Don't forget, this is the Associated Press. DNC, Clinton campaign agree to steal dossier funding fine. Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign and the DNC have agreed to pay $113,000 to settle a federal election commission investigation into whether they violated campaign finance law by misreporting spending on research that eventually became the infamous Steele dossier. The Clinton campaign hired Perkins Coie, which then hired Fusion GPS, a research and intelligence firm, to conduct opposition research on Republican candidate Donald Trump's ties to Russia. So, and it's not like Hillary didn't know this was going on. I'm sure she's not literally signing off on the papers, but you know what it takes, just a little nod. They all know how to operate. Associated Press. But on FEC forms, the Clinton campaign classified the spending as legal services. They paid their lawyers to concoct the smear campaign, and on the check, they wrote in the subject line, payment for legal services. That's what Donald Trump wrote on his check to Michael Cohen. And they have 38 federal charges against him. Somehow they've concocted this lie that this is a campaign finance violation, and trying to wrap your head around the steps that they take to get there is mind-boggling, makes no sense. Look at the Trump standard. I mean, it's far and away what Clinton did is black and white, a violation of the law. We'll just settle that. We'll pay 113 grand, make it go away. Donald Trump, you got a different set of rules for him. We're gonna uphold the law, even if we have to make it up as we go. Never forget Alvin Bragg in that infamous press conference where he admitted that he had no idea what he was doing. This is clip six.
Mr. Bragg, the indictment says that there were 34 false business records. And they were done to conceal another crime, but the indictment does not specifically say what those crimes were. We are assuming, perhaps, that they might be election-related. I'm wondering if you can specify what laws were also broken.
Sure. So let me say as an initial matter that the indictment doesn't specify that because the law does not so require. In my remarks, I mentioned a couple of laws, which I will highlight again now. The first is New York State election law, which makes it a crime to conspire to promote a candidacy by unlawful means. I further indicated a number of unlawful means, including more additional false statements, including statements that were planned to be made to tax authorities. I also noted the federal election law cap on contribution limits.
But why weren't there those crimes charged? What
can
he charge with those crimes?
Well, I'm not going to go into our deliberate process on what was brought. The charges that were brought were the ones that were brought. The evidence and the law is the basis for those decisions.
I can't say it enough. This is crazy world. And people are not protesting this. Can you specify what laws are broken? I don't have to. He just needs to pay for a defense team to defend Trump against some imaginary law. That's how they're operating this. They're telling the jury one thing, and the charges in the indictment don't even say that. The indictment doesn't specify what laws are broken, because I don't have to say what laws are broken. The evidence and the law is the basis for those decisions. And this is like, I covered it last year when it happened, but it's like, there's the misdemeanor, you rolled through a stop sign. Okay, yeah, you broke a rule. I'm not even saying Trump did that. Trump didn't even do that with any of this. So Bragg looks at that little misdemeanor of rolling through the stop sign and decides, well, what motivated him to roll through that stop sign? It must be because he was robbing a bank and he needed to get away from the scene of the crime really fast. Okay, where's the evidence that he was robbing the bank? Well, I don't have to present it. He just robbed the bank because he rolled through the stop sign. Well, do you have evidence that he robbed the bank? No, but because he rolled through this, that must have been what motivated him to roll through that stop sign. That is literally the legal argument he's making there. They have turned that into I think, it, what is it, 31 or 38 felony charges. And this is in liberal Manhattan. I had a story here talking about the prosecutors and the judges who let actual criminals go free. This is a clip from MSNBC. It still cannot understand what the crime is that Bragg is alleging Donald Trump violated. I mean, this is fundamental. If you're accused of a crime, at least say what the crime is. They're not doing it. Clip two.
But we're in this very strange situation where we're not entirely sure what that second crime, that aggravating crime, is going to be. We have a pretty good idea. We've narrowed it down to a couple different crimes. But yes, it's key for them. And they've been laying that foundation all the way.
Very strange situation indeed. Very strange. PJ Media, the trial still in search of a crime. Even after 5 weeks, the Trump bookkeeping case in Manhattan is a Potemkin village, according to law professor Jonathan Turley. That means it has all the appearance of being real, but upon closer inspection, there's no there. Indeed, the indictment of former President Trump on 34 counts of bookkeeping errors, statute-expired misdemeanors that have been miraculously spun into a series of felonies is the Seinfeld of criminal cases. But a jury could still find him guilty. It's Trump, Manhattan jurors could say to themselves. Of course, Cheeto Man must be guilty of something. But after the prosecutors told Judge Juan Merchan that their case in chief was wrapped, though not officially rested yet, after Michael Cohen's direct examination on Tuesday, there's still confusion over what crimes Trump is alleged to have committed. It's not a good look for the prosecutors, and it's disqualifying for a judge to allow this farce. He wants it to happen. It's a smear campaign. And they know it's their last chance right now to put Donald Trump in jail before the election. PJ Media says, if wizened legal minds can't figure out the game prosecutors are playing, then what is the jury supposed to do with this smoke and mirrors monstrosity? CNN and MSNBC, they can't even get their minds around it. Well, of course they're going to say Trump deserves to go to jail for it. I think it's something like if the jury decides he's guilty on all counts, it's like 140 years in prison. And the reason they charge him 34 times is, well, the jury came around and he's guilty of two of those charges, two counts. That's why you make 34 of them when they're all basically the same crime, in scare quotes, because we don't know what the crime here is in this case. The Trump standard is that we have a right to a speedy trial and we don't have to tell the accused what they're being accused of. That is Hillary Clinton. Justice delayed is justice denied. Trump's the accused here. Who's been wronged? The Democrat standard is, if it's Hunter Biden, we're going to need a special counsel just to shield him from any congressional inquiries or investigations. That special counsel is going to take 5-6 years maybe to sort this out. It just so happens by the time they gather all the details, well, statute of limitations has occurred. It was a long time ago. There's just no need to rush things. It's clear and obvious double standard. Speaking of double standards, there was this Oxford Union debate. A man named Winston Marshall was talking about how the elites, the Democrats, they're the ones imposing the tyranny in the West right now. And Nancy Pelosi, I'm not sure why she was there, but this speaker, his name is Winston Marshall, said, well, for as much, you know, as they're screaming about January 6th, I'm sure that they would condemn the siege of the federal courthouse in Portland during June of 2020. And look how Nancy reacts to this. This is clip 12.
And I'm sure Congresswoman Pelosi will agree that the entire month of June 2020, when the federal courthouse in Portland, Oregon, was under siege and under insurrection by radical progressives, those two were dark days for America.
Yes? There is no equivalence of it. So, but yes.
So you don't agree? And it's fine, you don't agree, that's fine.
But it is not like what happened on January 6th, which was an insurrection incited by the President of the United States.
So you don't agree? But you'll condemn those days.
I tend to agree, though. There isn't an equivalence. January 6th was 3 to 4 hours of unruly protesters. Congress was back in action a few hours later. May to July, August of 2020 was a terrifying moment in the United States. A moment where people were afraid to go out. People were afraid to go to airports. People couldn't go shopping because there's looting at every Target store, even in small cities. Small cities of 60, 70,000 people. There are riots across the country. And you're right. Nancy's right. There is no equivalence there because no one was bailing out the violent protesters on January 6th. Kamala Harris was bailing out the arsonists and the murderers in Minneapolis. People were frightened to go out. Police precincts were burned to the ground. I mean, it was a nationwide insurrection that lasted for weeks, organized by the Democratic Party, funded by the Democratic Party. She's right, there is no equivalence. The Summer of Love was far worse on every measure. The amount of people who were killed, the attacks on police officers, the officer in St. Louis who was killed. And again, where D'Souza talked about this on the show, the Republicans are so weak. And when you look at how the Democrats will not stop using January 6th, why can't the Republicans, let's go back and I would like a Summer of Love committee. Let's go back and let's interview the wife of that security guard who was shot trying to defend a store from the BLM looters. Let's hear their story. Let's get them up in primetime TV at a hearing. Let's hear from that older lady in Minneapolis, that black lady who they burned down her grocery store and she's on TV crying because she doesn't know where she's going to get food now. Why can't Republicans bring all of those people in and say, this is what they did to you, the American people. This is the what they forced you to go through. And they encouraged it and they paid for it. We're going to interview all of the shop owners who had their stores burned down. We're going to make a committee out of this because this can't happen again. Why won't they do something like that? And then Pelosi, they're so upset because they don't care about, you know, Joe America. They don't care about what happens on Main Street. But wow. If you're a protester and you get into Nancy Pelosi's desk and you put your feet up on her desk, you're going to jail for a long time. That's 5, 10, some of them get 20 years in the slammer. Because you don't touch Nancy Pelosi's office. You can break into the Supreme Court. You can occupy, you know, a Republican's office. You can put your feet up on their desk. You can prevent them from getting into your office. But once it gets a little too close to home, the Democrats, oh, they will crack the whip. But if it's a guy in Kenosha protecting his storefront and a few BLM supporters come and bash his head in with a fire, literally, I forgot about this one. This was the actual fire extinguisher assault. Forget what happened on January 6th. It's on video, the man in Kenosha, where they assaulted him with a fire extinguisher, bashed his head in, and knocked him to the ground. He's not going to get honored at the Capitol. All the police that were assaulted in New York City, the officers that were run over in Washington, D.C., Nothing. And Republicans to this day, why can't they do that? Why can't they have a committee to raise that, to play those videos? That was a digression. But going on, just about back to the lies, back to how they are attacking this nation, the immigration stats. This was leaked from, I don't remember who posted it, but it's an internal document about the number of gotaways each year. Gotaway is someone that they couldn't apprehend them at the border. A lot of them get caught and they're processed and they're released. That's bad. But a lot of them don't get caught, and they try to keep tallies of that. You can see it happen. We don't have the resources to go and get them. They don't return. Financial year 2020, there were 136,000 gotaways. Financial year 2021, Biden's first year in office, 387,000. Financial year 2022, full year in office for Joe Biden, 606,000. Financial year 2023, 670,000 people. That's over 1.5 million. That doesn't factor in the 8 or 9 million that have been processed, quote unquote. These are people that we couldn't get them. We have no idea who they are, and we have no idea where they are. This was a story you probably won't hear anything about. I had to really go digging to find it. It's from an outlet called Marine Corps Times. Two people in ICE custody after attempting to breach Virginia Marine Base. The Marine Corps prevented two people from breaking onto a Marine installation in Virginia on May 3rd and turned them over to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They weren't citizens. They drove up to this base in a van. They wouldn't stop at security. They went right through, and then they had to stop this van, and they arrested the drivers. When they arrested them, it says, when asked, the operator of the truck informed the military police officers they worked for a company subcontracted by Amazon and were making a delivery to the U.S. Post Office located in the town of Quantico. It says, Potomac Local News, which first reported the attempted breach, reported hearing from multiple unnamed sources that one of the truck's occupants was a Jordanian national who had recently crossed the southern border into the United States, and that one occupant was on the U.S. government's terrorist watch list. How often is that happening? Why is that? I think Fox might have reported on it or covered it. Terrorists coming across the border. And then when you ask Joe Biden, a lot of these blue state governors, they're having to deal with, they don't like the border policy anymore because it's getting a little too close to home. They actually have to deal with the problem that they started. And when you ask them now, well, Donald Trump, he should have got Republicans to sign that spending bill that miraculously would have made all of America's problems for centuries. They all would have disappeared had they just signed one more spending bill. But Donald Trump wouldn't do it. So the border, that's his fault. Inflation, that's his fault. Fox News, Ohio purges non-citizens from state voter rolls, calls on Biden administration for data ahead of 2024 election. They're going through and they're finding out that people who have admitted that they are not U.S. citizens are somehow on the voter rolls. They're registered to vote. They found a couple hundred of them and they took them off. But these are people that came forward and said, we're not U.S. citizens. It's not legal for us to vote. The state of Ohio is going to the federal government saying, We don't have a way to know if they're U.S. citizens. Ohio doesn't handle immigration visas. That's a federal issue. But a lot of people can get work permits from states. And they can get driver's license now. And they can get these temporary IDs. And a lot of these blue cities, they'll take anything. Some of them, you probably don't even need the ID. You just need a person. And then their vote, their ballot's just farmed out. This is an outlet called Just the Facts. It says 10% to 27% of non-citizens are illegally registered to vote. Now, this is going back, last 10 or 15 years, these estimates on how many people are in the country illegally, non-citizens that end up on these voter rolls. Well, how do they get there? Are they all going out and doing it themselves? A lot of them have admitted that they're not citizens. They don't want to get in trouble. The Democrats, they will do anything, anything to get Trump. They're so desperate. Mr. Fleury's latest article, this was on the website, I think it was the Morning Brief, "Artificial Intelligence and Another Attempt to Steal the Election. There is an acute danger to the election and the nation. This will not be a smooth process. Democrats will not concede if they lose. Donald Trump left a war his way back to power, no matter the election result." So says Bible prophecy. It says, "What we are seeing has nothing to do with democracy. It's about using deceit to sway people. It is a war over people's minds." He talks about how they'll do anything. He says, "We live in a world filled with lies. This curse is intensifying and people don't know what to believe or whom to trust. No democracy can survive such an environment." Of course, many accuse Mr. Trump of trying to steal the election, even though he is leading in the polls, which generally favor Democrats. But recent history shows it is the other side that will pull out all stops to prevent Trump from returning to the White House. This was a Washington Post. This was from the editorial board of the Post. This was last week. In the campaign against Donald Trump, do the ends justify the means? And they start that article saying, well, there's a lot of stuff that Biden does that it's not right, but Trump is so bad, it doesn't matter. It says the implicit rationale is that the ends, denying former President Donald Trump another 4 years in office, justifies the means. He's Hitler. Do whatever you have to do to stop him. This is the Washington Post editorial board. This is the tone of the Washington Post. This is the position of the Washington Post. To repeat, Mr. Trump's election is the kind of nightmare scenario any responsible politician would go to great lengths to prevent. Now they put that in some language and make it sound like, well, there has to be some limits. There has to be some standard. We can't go too far. Say what you have to say and do what you have to do to stop Donald Trump. Listen to this clip. This is George Stephanopoulos. I think he's on with one of the regime comedians the other night. Again, they're just, this is it. The war in 24, it's all or nothing. That's why they're not concerned about polls. It's why they're not concerned about the Biden campaign. This is clip 9.
You spent 28 years reporting on politics, including the presidential elections. Every election, we say this is the most important election of our lifetimes.
Cubit.
This one feels like this is the most important one, right?
Beyond anything we have ever seen in our entire lives. You know, you go back to George Washington, who gave up the presidency, saying, trying to set an example for the peaceful.
I only do two, and I'm out of here. That's it.
Peaceful transfer of power. This is the first time ever in our history we've had a former president, a presidential candidate, who tried to overturn an election, been indicted for it, and impeached for it. First time we've ever had a former president or a presidential candidate who lies about the last election that he lost and refuses to pledge that he's going to accept the results if he loses again.
This one feels like the most important one, beyond anything we've ever seen in our entire lives. This is it. This is where we make our stand. Do whatever you have to do, says the Washington Post. We don't need standards right now. Stop Donald Trump at all cost. This is an article from Axios. It says, Biden's polling denial. Why doesn't he believe he's behind? President Biden doesn't believe his bad poll numbers, and neither do many of his closest advisors, according to people familiar with the matter. The dismissiveness of the poor polling is sincere, not public spin, according to Democrats who have spoken privately with the president and his team. That bedrock belief has informed Biden's largely steady-as-she-goes campaign, even as many Democrats outside the White House are agitating for the campaign to change direction, given that Biden is polling well behind where he was 4 years ago. The public polling simply doesn't reflect the president's support. They say, I'm the first person to be critical of polls. I don't trust a lot of that stuff. But the Democrats, these politicos, they worship those things. So to see them not panicking, it's a pretty good indicator that they've got something else up their sleeve. Notice what Harry Enten on CNN says. He's the one that delivers all the bad polling news for the Democrats. We played his clip the other day about how Trump is surging. But notice what he says here about how much Biden used to really love these polls. Clip one.
The polling data has been wrong all along. How many you guys do a poll at CNN? How many folks you have to call to get one response? The idea that we're in a situation where things are so bad. The folks that, I mean, we've created more jobs.
So he doesn't like the polls. He doesn't like what they're showing right now. Is he right or is it wishful thinking?
He loved the polls 4 years ago when they showed him ahead. These are the same polls now.
He loved them 4 years ago. They loved talking about the red mirage that we'd see on election night. We've got a few more clips here, and I apologize. I have vastly mismanaged my time. I had a few more segments that I wanted to get through. This is another one. Skipping ahead here from the Washington Post. Republicans' chances at winning the Senate just skyrocketed. This talks about West Virginia Senate seat. I think his Manchin isn't running again. And then the staunchly Republican governor there just won the GOP primary to take that seat. There was another article here that I want to talk about. Just in New Jersey, when Trump had that huge rally there of 80,000 people. In New Jersey, you don't even see that mention as a battleground state. Donald Trump says, hey, we're making a play for it. This was an article from the Washington Examiner. It says this area that he visited, it's another one of those deplorable zones that everyone ignores. But in 2016, Clinton won that area. She barely won that region that he went to. But then this article says, sorry, I'm just reading this off my laptop, that Obama had won that area 63% to 37%. So a huge margin. Clinton is about to lose it. And then now Trump goes there and gets 80 to 100,000 people out there to see him. And then remember the election, the gubernatorial election there in 2021, that the Democrats won by 2 to 3%, barely scraped by in a race they said wasn't even going to be close, and barely made it. I mean, they are getting desperate. They're not relying on democracy to work for them. They are preparing to war in 2024, like Mr. Fleury wrote in that article. Well, I'll just conclude here. I had a quote here. This is just finishing off with Mr. Fleury's article that I mentioned earlier, A Dangerous New Age of Worshiping the Will. He says, if you are not rooted in Jesus Christ and God's word as revealed in the Bible, you are easily corrupted in the deeper strata of your emotional nature. Satan, the prince of the power of the air, broadcasts in moods, attitudes, and impulses that make us impervious to reason if we allow it. I mean, this is how you explain this world. This is how you explain that craziness that we've seen earlier on this show. Mr. Fleury says, there is always somebody out there who wants to get us to worship the will, but the only way to escape the devastating catastrophes prophesied to engulf America is to be rooted in truth based on the Word of God. He says, even those who see there is a real problem in America today don't recognize its full extent. There is an evil spiritual force that seeks to destroy America. That spirit is working in the radical left to fulfill that goal. We have to get grounded in the truth. We have to be valiant for the truth. We have to fight for the truth. Again, all of these details are covered in America Under Attack. If you don't have that book, request that for sure at our website. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. Mr. Stephen Fleury will be back with you tomorrow for the last program of the week. Send us your comments, td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you so much for joining us.